This is a production of Cornell University.
So I'm going to call the meeting to order now at 4:33. So first things first, just wanted to say hi to everyone. As many of you know, I'm not Bob. So I'm Jeff. I am the, for those of you who are not familiar, I am the Vice Chair of Operations. Both Bob and Taylor are not here today, so I will be chairing today's meeting. But the first thing that I want to mention on the agenda is any call for late additions to the agenda. Now, I know right now that there is one thing we wanted to add, but was there anything besides the resolution that was put in the folder yesterday that wanted to be added? No? So is there any resolutions that want to be brought up? Well, bring it, motion it to put on the agenda. Okay, so, all right, so motion by...
To add the second resolution.
Yes, so the motion on the floor is the resolution that was brought up in the last UA meeting, Resolution 10, and it was motioned by Richard, seconded by Logan. Any dissent on the motion? No? All right. All in favor? Any opposed? Any abstentions? Great. So now the resolution will now be in the agenda. We'll put it at the end after the Cornell policy draft. So before the committee update. So with the first business of the day, we have the approval of the last two UA meeting minutes. We have the one from September 3rd with revisions that were involved, as well as the one from October 1st. Now, yes, Logan.
I make a motion to table both because the revisions for the September meeting that were made involving my and Charlie's discussion were excluded from this one, and then I believe that there were revisions made to the October one that... That is also not in the packet.
Okay. So does anybody want a second Logan's motion?
Second.
Just a second. And so any discussion, any questions about the motion on the floor? To table? No? All right. All in favor of tabling the minutes? Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, so the motion has been approved. We will now table these for the next meeting, and then we'll come back and try and reapprove these with the correct provision. Great. So next up we have a presentation from Michelle, who will be talking about the annual report, and some of this you might have seen already in our box, but Michelle, go ahead.
All right. Yeah, we'll do that. Okay. I was wondering why I was missing something. I think I was missing something. Let's do that. It's a cultural error. It's not real hair. We'll come after that, yeah.
Very similar to most of campus. It was a very busy year. Went through really quickly. When we think about what really added to the speed and complexity of the year was an increase in complex cases, multi-party cases, and policy and cases across campus policies. I'm very excited to say that as the perception of the OJ continues to evolve, the office and our staff are more readily included as collaborative partners on campus matters. The continued challenges of the code remain that external procedurally complex structure of the documents, the futile efforts to revise the code. But when we think about some of the other positive things that happened this year, we included and implemented a lot of personal development sanctioned with our students. Each year, my office would set a theme for the year, and last year I set recognizing the past, realizing the future. What I got that down was likely the recognition that we needed to honor where the code was, but really move forward to where we think it should be. Of note, we had 820 referrals to our office last year. That's almost a 30% increase in caseload. I think that's a positive thing. I actually think our numbers are still a little bit on the lower side when we look at the amount of students who live on campus. But to me, that's demonstrating that there's faith and trust in the process and people are making referrals. Of those referrals, the University Caring Board was convened 10 times. It was assembled more than that, but oftentimes cases can be resolved by a summary decision agreement before it goes to the hearing, but the process is dictated by the code that it needs to continue. Of those 10, UHB, four qualified and were appealed to the University Review Board, and zero of those four cases qualified for presidential appeal because they didn't include acts of violence. During academic 2019, the personnel of the OCA remained stable, but with the addition of a temporary employee. I want to publicly highlight how tremendous the OJA staff is. I can't speak more highly of the folks who are in there. They balance student development and process in a way that I think is really admirable, and they are dedicated to civil service to this university. One of the things that was important to me when I looked at the data poll and I considered the amount of cases that occurred this year was that for the first time since I've been here, there was a lag time between when a case is referred to our office and when the case is adjudicated. Keeping that time frame short is really important to me because we want these educational interventions as quick as time to behavior so that recidivism is hopefully diminished. We did see anecdotally a correlation for the first time since I've been here that the amount of recidivism in the same academic year actually rose, which I do think is a reflection of the fact that there's a little bit of a longer time between meeting with the students and the time of referral to the closure of the matter. As expected, the caseload added to the work, but there was an unexpected cause of the increased caseload that I want to bring to the UA's attention, and this is the uptick of obstruction cases. When we look at the code, there are three types of obstruction, and all three have been upheld by the University Caring Board as the invalid provisions of the code that denote responsibility. The first is that there's an inherent duty to cooperate with the enforcement of the code, and we've clumped that under the obstruction provision. So, for example, we often will, a respondent will identify a witness to say that this person might have exculpatory information, and our office will meet with that individual. We'll call them in, give them all the rights as a witness. But when that student or faculty member or staff member fails to come into the office, that delays the fair process for the person who may accuse them of the code. And so what happens if a student, in all the cases for obstruction this year with student cases, does not come in, then we open up an obstruction case against that individual, adjudicate that case, and then go back to the underlying instance. Because even if that individual doesn't have information that is relevant that the respondent wanted to have produced, it is important for the respondent that that individual was interviewed and they need to honor that for a fair and full investigation. The second type of obstruction is guidance and student sanctions. One of the aspects I'm asking the CJC and the UA to consider in the code revision is add to the code a failure to complete sanctions. I think that more candidly describes the obstruction, but with the code that we have right now, we have classified under obstruction and we have upheld that. The code technically says that anybody who is overdue with their sanctions has to be automatically suspended. Our office thinks that's too punitive, and so what we have decided to do is that if a student is laid on their sanctions, they automatically get a one-week grace period as an extension. If the student remains, the respondent remains overdue with their sanctions, then instead of temporarily suspending them, we open up a new case for obstruction. Then what happens is the process goes through, and then we had two instances this year, this past academic year, in which a student was overdue on their obstruction for obstruction cases. We've inserted the opportunity to temporarily suspend them at that instance because we were looking at this as almost a full year process in which the sanctions were done, and the code says it, and we think that following the code in that instance The third isn't about disruption, and this is the one that's more palpable to what our values as a community are. Are individuals not provided truthful information during investigations? This is really important because the information that's gathered in an investigation must be reliable, because such information has a ripple effect. It can determine whether any interim measures need to be enacted to protect the campus community or its members, and ultimately it is used to decide whether a person or an organization should remain part of the Cornell community. Although it may be uncomfortable to disclose the truth about a matter that one observed, especially if there is recognition that one may observe is contrary to the values and rules of Cornell, veracity must not be a transient value in this community. The precedent from the UHC decisions this year have supported that honesty is an expectation when participating in an investigation under the code. While the caseload of the OJA increased substantially in academic year 2019, this data does not accurately capture the increased workload of the office. In particular, the data does not capture the work generated from conducting co-investigations with primarily the office's returning and sorority wife. The time, effort, cost, and administrative wherewithal required by these investigations cannot be overstated. However, the importance of investigating the behaviors within the focus of these joint investigations, hazing, cannot be minimized. I would encourage you to not look at our hazing website, through Cornell Health, to really understand the types of behaviors that are being investigated on this campus, and really considering what the UA can do to start to address some of these matters. I also want to say that these joint investigations really honor the victims and the individuals who come forth to report behaviors that are problematic in our community. We keep anonymous individuals who report hazing, and we do that for the safety of the individual and to encourage employers. As I mentioned, contributing to the whirlwind case here included the fact that as the perception of our office evolved, the office and its staff are more readily included as collaborative partners. For example, we were really excited this past year that RAs would invite our staff to come in to do the living phase of students to give presentations. That demonstrated that there's frankly a shift of what our office is viewed as. Our office has been purposeful in working to dispel the mythos associated with the office. While I understand that a kind of office will never be the place that people automatically think of as a place of care and concern and support, that is what we do. At the end of the day, we are student affairs professionals who are trying to keep the community safe by holding folks accountable. What is really profound is that students overwhelmingly disclose behaviors, the reasons for their behaviors in these proceedings. So we've had folks share natural behavior, for example, transfer boards, breakups, and other personal matters that this is the first opportunity that they've been able to share on a one-on-one setting, and then we can connect them to resources with campus partners. One of the things that I am asking for the UA's help is to continue to find platforms for the OJA to explain the values of the campus community and the expectations of students. We've been working to put the code as a pre-enrollment or pre-orientation on the new member checklist, and we'll be working with that to make sure that students understand the expectations of their behavior when they come here. As I shared, despite efforts to change the perceptions of the OJA and the work that we do, there remains one paramount obstacle to being fully realized as an office which supports students, and that's the adversarial nature of the code. The adjudication of behaviors in a university setting is an educational administrative process. While fundamental fairness requires an appropriate set of checks and balances in the process of behavioral adjudication, the code favors the privilege of affiliating with Cornell or remaining at Cornell without learning from behavioral choices more than the privilege of the community members to study, live, and work in a place where the rules of the community are respected. The adversarial nature of the code is most evident in the university hearings. These are Leviathan proceedings in which the focus is not directed towards learning the facts or evaluating the harm caused by the respondent's actions or whether the code provisions are met. But these have been, I can't share how problematic these hearings are. They are a time which the OJA is pitted against the students because it's seen as prosecutorial instead of the OJA saying, these are the values of the community and we're representing the community. There have been some outside attorneys who have been particularly problematic, and it's a kudos to the university hearing board members and the chairs. So there's no reason that a simple alcohol case should take 7, 8, 9 hours to handle instead of a hearing. That is completely outside the bounds of what's appropriate. That's problematic for the respondents, problematic for case handlers, and problematic for those folks who are volunteering their time. I spoke a little bit about the value of the OJA staff, and it's a credit to them and the respondents who go through these hearings that there's any chance of reconciliation or learning following these hearings. So examples such as our probation program. I asked the UA to consider footnote 11 in my annual report. This is talking about what is it, the expectation for members of the university hearing review. Are we going to the place that we are going to be looking at reducing the mode for some of the chairs to sit on the proceedings? Is it possible to get academic in the platform for some students to sit on these proceedings? Or how do we recognize that student staff are sitting on these proceedings, whether it's in notes or a personnel hall, or the resolution that you all pass every year at the end of the year? I'm going to quickly just summarize the idea that we recognize that amending the code and changing it and revising it is a Herculean task, and so I am grateful that the University Assembly has asked the administration to help us, and the OJA will continue to support efforts for drafting the revision. I want to point to three educational interventions within the system that our office implemented. These are kind of big pilots, and I want to make sure that in academic year 2018, we implemented a suspension reintegration year. But academic year 2019 was the first year that somebody returned from a suspension and participated in that program. It's based on restorative justice circles, and even though it's a small sample size of the folks who came back from a suspension, I'm having a successful one. I think we integrated those folks back into our community in a meaningful way and continue to support them while some of their peer groups may have graduated and they're still campus. Second, we partnered with the Career Services College to expand our decision-making class curriculum, and this is an educational station for students who have made some decisions that were based off of poor decision-making and did not involve the consumption of drugs or alcohol. And finally, this year we implemented a reflective chart. Even though students have always been able to choose what sort of reflection piece that they wanted to, we actually have a list, and this is an appendix B of the annual report. So we've got some great songs, we've got some good podcasts, comic strips are really good popular station reflection pieces. But we think this has a dual purpose. We think it first provides a meaningful reflection for the way that folks want to reflect. It also helps students when they come to the university that maybe some of the talents and hobbies and ways of instructing that they might have put aside as their academic load got higher, they were able to reconnect with those. And the genesis of this was really from the faculty or staff case from the faculty or staff member who English is not their first language, and they really brought up the idea of providing an alternate station that would not be as encumbering as writing a 5-page paper. I listed some future goals and considerations for our office, just so that you are aware of some of the things that we're working on. We really want to start to develop some additional sanctioning options for organizations. This is an area where we have a database, but we're going to continue to grow and build on that. We are transitioning to a paperless office. A kind of office is never going to be a place where you can go completely paper-free, but we've gotten to the point that respondents can sign iPads for their SBAs, they can still be sent an electronic copy of it, things of that nature. Our hearing boards, we have just started using iPads for those hearings, and so the hearing packet traditionally on the small end of which a student has not even showed up to our office is 50 pages. Last year, some of our larger hearing packets were 500-600 pages long because they included transcripts. And so, moving toward the paperless process, we're excited for that. We are going to continue to build on a partnership with the Schaumann Institute. This is a program that we've had for the past 3 years, and we're continuing to build the types of cases that are referred to that program, and that's a peer-to-peer adjudication process. We are going to continue strengthening the educational interventions used for Good Samaritan Protocol cases. There's a lot of time where we think that there's a need for some additional education, and our friends and colleagues at Cornell Health do a great job of working with students, but sometimes there's information in the GSP case that I would like to do a little bit more follow-up with. We're also going to be implementing a probation petition length reduction process, so the same way that students who are suspended can petition to have that transcript notation removed from their transcript. We are looking to and have closely finalized the process for individuals who have been placed on probation to lower the 6-year reporting length after graduation. And unfinished tasks in the previous year in included revising the website and creating the JA Advisory Council. I will yield now to questions. You have the appendix and the analyst in front of you, but more part of the excitement to get your questions.
Okay, so we're going to make a speakers list. So first off, Joseph.
Yeah, thank you so much, Michelle, always. I think as a student and as an RA, DOJ's office has been invaluable. I'm curious about the DOHRB and the conversation with kind of the intense nature of it, especially with outside attorneys, and especially with JCCs and the relationship that, you know, is it just the outside of the attorneys that we're seeing not understanding the system, just prolonging the system to drag it? Do we see that mostly happening in organizations? And how are the JCCs interplaying with that? Do the JCCs understand the restorative model that UHRB should be playing, or is it just the full system itself that kind of just doesn't allow for any restorative process?
I think it's really hard to have the process be restorative when it's set to be adequate.
Yeah.
And so we've done things like trying to set the room for the detailed magisterial. Our office really respects precedent, so when the university says that this is the type of sanction that's for this violation, we don't fight that. I think that some advisors and outside counsel maybe don't have that same understanding of the precedential weight of that. That's not to say that some precedents shouldn't be overturned. There's hearing board precedent number six actually is one that the UA will be challenging if we ever have the opportunity for that. That involves the case of a tenant strike on campus, which the University Hearing Board found that the student was not responsible for that, for endangerment, because they didn't think that he was using that dangerously. And the plan which our office thought was a violation of the Code of Ethics provision. But I think it does become what's permitted, pre-hearing motions, and so you're already going into a room in which there's already debate and dialogue.
Yep.
So, Michelle, I have two questions. The first one is really just informational. We received the security report, and in the security report, the number of liquor law violations went up from 205 to 459. And then I was looking in your report, and the number of freshman violations went up from 296 to 523. So it looks like the freshmen are really breaking the law. So that's the first question. Am I reading this right?
So 523 doesn't have to be an alcohol violation. It could be any violation.
I understand that, but I'm looking at the security report, and the security report shows this jump of 254 in liquor law violations in which a referral was involved. So referrals to you, right?
I'm not responsible for the annual security report, so that's CPD. So my expertise in clarion is not.
Well, anyway,
I don't know what it means.
The question is, the question basically, what do the data hands out? So the first question is, what are the freshmen doing wrong? I mean, it's an explosion. It's almost a double, and a doubling in violations.
So I don't think they're doing anything wrong. I think they're making choices that are developmentally appropriate, right? So it's the idea that, and the big jump is to me, I think, is credit to the North Campus and West Campus housing, that the RAs are feeling empowered to actually address situations and things of that nature. So I think it's actually a reflection of different training and training mechanisms in those settings and supporting the students as they address some of those pre-gaming and things of that nature. But when we look at student conduct numbers across the board, right, freshmen will always be our highest category because they're on their own for the first time, they're experimenting, they're trying to meet some social needs and something that put themselves in settings where they wouldn't typically do it in sophomore or junior year. So I actually see the jump as a positive reflection of reporting.
So it's more monitoring of depression that's getting the report. So the second question has to do with public record number three. which is a liquor violation in Mysore, India, in which the respondent consumed, and quoting, consumed an alcoholic drink at a dinner, and then was prosecuted for that. And in the end, the case was held not responsible. But the major thing that's of interest to me is not the details of this particular case, except that the problem was getting witnesses and having witnesses that could testify as to the facts of the case. And this has a problem in jurisdiction of the code outside the United States, which I think is, we've talked a little bit about this in OJC, but this is the first time I've seen the record. So were there any other cases like this? This one was dismissed on the basis of not having witnesses.
Public record 3 was a joint hearing in which one student was found responsible and was found not responsible. So there's the hearing board that was responsible, not together. We didn't have any issues with finding witnesses. We had individuals who were there at that event. And so the reason why that was considered on campus. And so the same way of an athletic team is taking a bus to Harvard, right? That bus would still be considered on campus because it's being used for an educational purpose. And so with that Mysore, India case, the level of control and autonomy by the university was so high that it was still considered on campus. So for example, there was a pre-approved list of restaurants that they could go to. They had to have a chaperone. They had to have a cell phone on them. And so our office felt that it was considered on campus because of the level of control. And the hearing board didn't challenge that. They found that the facts of the matter demonstrated that one student did drink alcohol and the other one did not.
It's just to follow up. It said in the third part of the findings, it said in both cases, these witnesses did not describe these events to Cornell staff until approximately 6 weeks later, when it would have been difficult to recall whether most of the people at the dinner had a drink or everyone had one. And the other part is the OJA's office objected to one of the respondents' witnesses because the office was unable to meet and interview that person. Well, the reason you couldn't interview that person was they were in India, I take it.
No, so
they graduated. But the point is, it was witnesses that were involved with the report.
No, so the witnesses, the way that it's actually set out, is that the witnesses testified that they didn't think that there was enough witnesses who actually saw the behavior that was being accused of. So the witnesses testified. The witnesses, we had a cadre of folks that actually came to testify, but the hearing board found that what the witnesses observed wasn't enough to bring it to some of the folks. So there wasn't an issue actually for the hearing. So I
can
get what you're saying
when
reading it, but.
Yeah. Anyone else have any questions? Yeah,
sure. I just want to follow up on my question. And this might be like a massively radical idea that probably isn't allowed in like the law period. Is there a boundary to what outside counsel is allowed to involve themselves in judicial processes of the university for students? Could we implement a limit, or could we have like a selection of outside counsels that understand the code that students can equitably attain? Because I'm assuming there's an equity issue with some students are able to attain outside counsel and some students aren't able to attain outside counsel if you want to go past the JCC. So is that a possibility that other student conduct officers have taken a look at?
I think one of the things that I'd be worried for that is that I think a student has the right to choose the advisor of their choice. I think one of the greatest credits of this university is that we have the Office of the Judicial Code Counselors, which is definitely worth, I can't speak more highly about that. Our chairs are feeling more empowered to address behavior that they think is problematic in hearings. And so I think that's something that's positive. We start to see chairs that serve multiple years and multiple hearings. I think the underlying question that's really of value, and I know this is brought up from the Office of the JCC and the CJC, is another code resolution, it has the advisors serving more of the plotted plant model, which is like the worst thing to say, but the idea is what's the role of the advisors in the proceeding? Are they an active participant? Are they a support? Are they an advisor? And looking for that. And so I think that's the underlying question that I kind of have to wrestle with some proceedings in our university system. The advisor is more the part of plan that I can't speak in those proceedings. But the idea of limiting just folks who know our code. Sometimes we find people who know our code are the ones who tend to speak the most or the ones who are most problematic. And so we are working with some ways in which to help them understand that maybe gaming could be developmental for our students and the ethics and ethos of a barge training look a little bit different than an educational setting than we have before.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, come on.
Regarding the India case, are students sufficiently informed of the fact that regardless of a country's laws, they cannot drink under the age of 21? Because I wasn't even aware of that. And I would argue that a lot of my peers are not, that they would assume because a country's drinking laws are 18, they would not have to be 21 to drink. So what is the policy for making people aware of that, that, you know, Cornell Code of Conduct supersedes country laws?
So, Cornell isn't superseded at our campus. Is limited to on-campus unless it's a serious violation. So if somebody was smoking weed in Amsterdam, that would be a serious enough violation for me to exercise off-campus jurisdiction, the same way if somebody was drinking underage in college time. But the fact that that case was still considered on campus because of such a close relationship with that. In that instance, also because of the sponsored fund by an alumni, the students signed an additional documentation saying that they would agree to the conduct and follow the rules of the program. And so that was a case in which we thought there was not only sufficient evidence that the folks were advised of their requirements, but also the fact that it was still considered on campus. If they were just in India, you know, traveling, backpacking, and drinking underage, and somebody said, I saw an 18-year-old drinking with a Cornell backpack, we would have seen jurisdiction.
Thank you.
Who else? Logan?
Yeah, I don't have a question, but I just wanted to thank Michelle for 2 years in a row being a very active member of the CJC and offering really wonderful insight and input, and not only agreeing with members, but being so professional and just always being there as an ex officio member, and we're really grateful to have her. So thank you.
Any other questions?
I've always really loved to have a more in-depth conversation about it in my report. Please just feel free to call the office. I know that you're wrestling with a lot of processes and policies, and I'm happy to share.
Great. Thank you so much, Michelle. Alright, so we'll move next on to our next, yes. So actually, before we continue, Foster reminded me that we actually never did roll call, so we should probably do that. So can we quickly go and do that roll call, and so that we can figure out whether we have quorum or not, even though we already voted. So so I'm going to go around this way and start. So yeah, go ahead and do the roll call. Yeah.
Amani Allen.
Here.
Joseph Anderson.
Here.
Andy Barrientos Gomez.
Here.
Christopher Bart. Richard Bensel.
Here.
Jane Fontenoy.
Here.
Shang Wen Chin.
Here.
Mata Haddad.
Here.
David Heiner.
Here.
Robert Howard. Adam Howell.
Here.
Logan Penny.
Here.
Thomas. Ellis Lowe. Gavin Martin.
Here.
Rennell Mensa. Jeff Keith.
Here.
T.R. Thompson. Charles Van Loan.
Here.
Great. So now that we've done roll call, we can move on to the next item. Oh, sorry, I'm just keep letting you in. Go ahead.
So it turns out we did have the edited version of
You did?
Yeah. It's on page 6 from 27.
Okay. For which minute? It's been the month
September.
Okay. What about October? Is there still edits needed in the October one? Okay. So if anybody would want to motion to put it on again. If not, then we can do both those together since we've already tabled them for the next meeting. So you have two options there. But anyway, so moving on, we want to go to the next item, which is a resolution to mark 50 years of the Cornell University Ombudsman. Charlie, do you want to mention anything about it?
Yeah, so it started in 1969, and that's 50 years. It's a really important office. The only tricky thing is you never find out any results or what happens after someone goes there. But I think a lot of good things do flow from it. And so the resolution acknowledges that and encourages us all to refer people when appropriate to the ombudsman office. That's about it. I think we can, if there's any discussion, certainly have it, but we can probably vote on it.
Yeah. Any questions for Charlie before we go to the vote? Just wanted to mention that I think it's really a nice symbolic thing to do to kind of show the service that they've done. So, yes, Logan.
Yeah, the only thing I want to add is Marty resigned before this date, it looks like. He resigned the 23rd of October, so I would just take his name out.
Okay. Yes, so we can modify the resolution. Put on the record that. So I'm gonna motion to amend the resolution to edit out Marty's name.
And then.
Yes, Logan can second that. All in favor of this edit of this amendment? Great. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Great. Now we can look at the motion on the table.
Sorry, I'm also going to motion to amend and Tomas, who's a NELI member.
Okay, so we make another amendment. So you motion the amendment.
Yeah.
Anyone want to second that?
Sorry.
Joe seconds. All right, all in favor? All opposed? Any abstentions? No, it's okay. Great, so the motion, the amendment is approved. So now we have the correct list of people on there. Yes.
May I motion to also add Shane Watson?
We should have all done this together. Yes. The motion is to amend so that we can add Shane onto the list. Any seconds? Joe? All right. I'm just going to do, is anybody dissent on the motion, at the amendment I have? No? Okay. If not, it's approved by unanimous consent. All right. So now we have the motion on the floor for the resolution resolution of the recognition at hand. So, anybody want a motion? Oh, sorry, all those in favor?
We didn't motion to vote.
Oh, we didn't motion to vote, you're right. My bad. Sorry, guys. So, we have to go backtrack a little bit. So, motion?
Second.
Okay. So Richard, motion. Logan seconded. All in favor? All opposed? Any abstentions? Thanks, gang, for hanging in with me. Long day. All right. So the next thing on the agenda is a Cornell policy draft on minors at Cornell. Now, this was brought to my attention from the exec team. Specifically, what they were hoping for is just any questions or comments. We're not voting on anything in particular. So if we want, we can make a speakers list to address anything that was seen in the document for all of you. So with that, does anybody have any questions or comments about this draft?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I guess I'll kind of rephrase this in the sense that it's not questions for me, because I actually don't know, but this is questions that we will write down and have to give back to the university. So can you repeat your questions a little once again?
I guess I'll find out the police, and where do they fit
in the terms of the policy. Okay, great. So we'll have that as something to bring forward. Any other comments or questions? Richard?
Just a question. Who prepared this?
So in terms of the responsible office, as you can see, is the Office of Risk Management Insurance. This was brought to me by the exec team.
Is that a new office?
So I personally am unaware of it. You might have. Sorry, Joe. Risk management and insurance.
It's an old office. And are these policies new? Or are they just a statement of existing policies?
I think this is a new policy, I believe, that was previously unaddressed. I think it's mentioned in here that... Yeah, so Logan, go ahead.
Yeah, so I can speak to a lot of this because I met with Elliot Young, who drafted this already.
Okay.
So it is a new policy, and their office is seeking any input on readability, if anything's unclear. Mr. Young was really open to discussing like language changes. We went through it line by line, so... it
is
pretty new, but yeah, it was drafted by Elliot Young.
Okay,
so if there are any questions, like he said, anybody can contact him.
Okay. Yeah.
Logan, I'm going to contact you. What do you think
it is? So you said
you went through a plain language.
Yeah, so this was a couple weeks ago. If you want to give me a couple of minutes to look through what my suggested changes were, I could do that. But I would need a couple minutes because I haven't looked at it since it's been about a month.
Great. So yeah. So given that context, like for me, in terms of my understanding of the policy, I've only read it. But in terms of the background. You can refer to Elliot or Logan for any questions specifically about language and the content. Any other questions or comments regarding the draft? Yes.
So right now, to my knowledge, this is the draft that they are prepared to continue moving forward with, but they're trying to get community input. So if the UA wants to cast me as the point person and everyone can send me their input on this draft and I can reach that out to Elliot, I'd be glad to do that. But I'm not sure regarding whether he is adding anything else. I think he was looking more for like confusion, and I had a lot of notes, so I can send you personally, and I can send anyone else. I don't want to waste time with the UA right now, but I had a lot of notes about restructuring and some changes in the procedures.
Great. Yeah.
Just a quick question. So it is available for public distribution and comment, or is it just seeking the input of the UA?
I am aware of Mr. Elliott meeting with other constituent groups. I'm not sure if this is published somewhere, though.
Mm-hmm. From my understanding, at least from my end in terms of how it was given to me. It wasn't explicitly mentioned. It was in the public. But, Rufina, Gina, do you have anything to add?
My understanding is, of course, that the University Assembly has a stakeholder on policy development. So policies that are going to be put out for the community will come before, because there's a policy on policies, and so it's brought forth in that capacity. So it's not really meant for public review, it's meant for this body, which represents the public community.
Gotcha. Yes, Logan.
Yeah, I just recommend, it doesn't have to be me, but that we move to have one person collect all of the comments of the UA into Mr. Young so that he's not getting emails from all of us. And I would volunteer to do that if somebody wants to move for me, or if anybody else wants to do that. I just strongly recommend that we do not all send Mr. Elliott a ton of emails.
Great. Would you like there to be a motion in the case? Or? Okay. All right. The motion is to have Logan be the point person for the draft.
Discussion?
Yes. Go ahead.
I just have to reset a timeline so that I'm not receiving emails for the next couple of months. So if we can discuss a timeline and then give me a motion to send me comments to send to Australia by a certain time.
A question for you, Logan, is what do you think Elliot wants in terms of his timeline for the policy in general? Do you think these are timelines for when you want it completed and provide?
So I think that they're trying to move as quickly as possible.
Okay.
I cannot remember off the top of my head if it was at the end of this semester or sometime next semester, but that's also something I could find out. I would personally recommend we take no more than 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I think that's an appropriate timeline, and I can reach out to Mr. Young myself and let him know that within 2 weeks he's going to get comments from the UA.
Great.
So I move to amend Richard's motion to add a 2 week.
All right. So who seconds? Who seconds the amendment?
I think Gavin did.
Gavin did? Sorry, I didn't see. Thank you. All right. So, you're voting. Flying up everywhere. All right. Motion to approve the amendment. Any opposed? All right. Any abstentions? All right. So, looks like the amendment passes. So now, with the actual motion to have Logan be the point person for the policy, and that members of the UA provide her feedback within the next 2 weeks. All right. Any of those, any dissent on the motion? No? All right. So the motion passes with unanimous consent. So any questions, feel free to bring it up to him. Okay. Fantastic. All right. So now we're going to move into the next thing we're going to move is that late edition of the agenda that we talked about, which is Resolution 10, put forward by the CJC. So this was a rather late addition to the folder. For those who saw, it should have come in yesterday, or if not this morning. Richard, do you want to briefly discuss the resolution?
The resolution does is restate what the CJC's understanding of its jurisdiction with respect to the code is. And in essence, it's not making new law, it's not making new powers, it's not doing anything except that. And the main reason we wanted to do this is that we have had several hours of discussion about how we were going to proceed and how others wanted us to proceed in considering the revision of the code. And we've done a lot of work. And one of the problems in doing that work is that we want to make certain that we know exactly who and what we are as we do this. So that's the purpose of the resolution. It has no other purpose except that.
Okay, so I'm going to motion. Someone, can I get a motion to the resolution in a second before we go into further discussion? Logan motion.
Second.
Second by Richard. So now the floor is open. Gina, yes.
Excuse me, just a point of clarification.
Yes.
It was meant as UA resolution X.
X? Oh,
so that
sorry.
The UA could describe a number. Yeah.
My bad.
That
looks like 10.
Oh my gosh, I missed 8
minutes. No. Sorry, my bad. I assumed it was the Roman numeral. Okay, so it is just arbitrary number. All right. Sorry, I also saw out the corner of your eye, you were shocked. I was like, oh, my bad. Any comments or questions about the modified resolution? No, I feel like a lot of our discussions came from last meeting, and I think a lot of us were in consensus about how we felt about this relationship. Yes.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment that after the last meeting, we still felt the same, we still received the same treatment and pressure on our committee, and in my opinion, different treatment than the other chairs of my constituent peers, Chris is not here, have been given, and our autonomy has been strict. And the reason that the resolution is being brought back up is because the CJC spent 30 to 40 minutes just talking about this at our last meeting, and it has hindered our progress, and we have gone along very, very far. That will be something that I bring up in my report, and I recommend a different motion.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to clarify that the reason that this is being brought back to the table is because the problems that we discussed at the last meeting continued after.
Right, yeah. Being involved in the conversation since the last meeting, I can understand the challenges that still exist. And hopefully this will be one way to move forward with that. And this will be an ongoing process that we'll try and flesh out. Any other questions or comments?
I have a question about, like, procedures.
Mm-hmm.
So it was tabled indefinitely, right? How is, like, Robert's rule, how does that work around this?
Which one is tabled indefinitely?
We have to vote first. So this is to bring back the previous motion that was tabled definitely in the last UA meeting, given the accordance of Robert's rules. So all in favor? Actually, no, this is the other way around. Anyone dissent to the... Yeah. No? Okay. So the motion passes with you. Oh, yes. Any abstentions? I would recommend that those who were not involved in the last meeting abstain. Yeah, Andy, come on. Anyways, I'm not going to quote anyone. Anyway, so... There are three abstentions. Okay, so... three abstentions. Barring the abstentions, the motion still passes. So now we have the motion that was indefinitely tabled back on the floor. Logan?
I move to vote on our resolution.
Okay, anyone? Any second? Seconded by Richard. All right. Now, sorry. So I'm going to ask for a vote now. So does anybody dissent to the motion on the floor? No? In that case, then the motion passes with any abstention. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. Any abstention? So the motion now is the resolution that was brought forward in its current version, and that, yes. Does anybody have, so, once again, I'm going to do it the other way now. So all those in favor of the motion?
In favor?
In favor, yeah. So we're going to do it this way. All in favor of the motion. All right. And all opposed? Any abstentions to the motion? Four? Okay. So, those are people approved, but I believe that we have enough votes for the motion to be approved. Okay. And okay, so can you, for those who approve, can you flip your hands, your placards again, or hands? 1, 2. No, more than that.
Wait,
1, 8, 3, 4,
5,
6,
7,
8.
Oh, it's 8.
8.
Yeah.
Jeffrey,
you voted.
Oh.
No, he.
You have two abstentions.
5 abstentions. So, 8 approved, 5 abstentions. Good call. Yes, the motion should pass. Great. All right, moving on now to committee updates. So, first one up is Campus Welfare Committee. We have a brief update about the tobacco survey from David. David, do you want to?
It will be a very brief update. Currently, the survey is ongoing. It's up, and you can respond to it up until November 15th, and it'll stop at midnight. Currently, we have 3,200 respondents, which I guess is pretty good. The crazy gene is excellent. So the most people that have responded are from staff, but undergraduate students are a close second. Each one are about 33-34%. And the rest aren't horrible, but they're not nearly as good as undergrad staff. We still don't have a lot of union respondents. We've only got about 65 of about 1,300 of that population. Let's see. What else can I talk about? Today, in terms of the question of those who would support a smoking ban on campus, there's about 65%. Yeah, about 65% support a smoking ban on campus.
Based on the survey.
Based on the survey, as is today.
Okay. All right. Any questions for David? Martha.
Will there be any more efforts to engage more union workers?
So just yesterday, a communication went out to the United Auto Workers Union Association, the constituents, with their annual newsletter. There is a full page in there with the flyer, and they can take the survey out there.
Mm-hmm.
So there are additional efforts.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments? I was going to mention that I'm curious the respondents for the survey as opposed to the respondents on the online forum, the discussion group.
Oh, yeah, you counted the online discussion through the website project.
Yes.
And you said there was, what, 300?
There's roughly 300 comments to the link that was posted on campus.
Yeah.
My general skimming of the content seems like it's the opposite statistic, but I think those are things that we will both CWC will look at. But yeah, it's very interesting to see the responses verbally in terms of text.
Yeah, I apologize. I haven't looked at any of the online comment discussions because I just don't want to see the negative or any of that at the moment. I'll tabulate all of that and have it all in a big workbook so we can all see it, review it.
Richard, you had something to say?
Yeah, just a question. So after you get the results, the committee then deliberates on the policy?
So after the survey closes, I will take the results, download them. I will analyze them based on the different populations that have responded and come up with some charts and graphs that will show what each constituency is thinking about a smoking ban, whether or not we support it.
And then the committee?
The committee will then deliberate it.
And then it comes to?
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll rate our recommendation
yeah.
to the full UA.
Yeah. So there's a couple of steps still to get to before all of you will see it here. But that's the intention after the survey closes.
Right.
And can you remind me how long will the survey be open for?
Until November 15th.
Okay. So you guys have 2 weeks-ish. Well, it's a little bit less than 2 weeks. If you haven't filled it out. Great. With that, we'll move on to CJC. Logan, do you want to talk a little bit about everything that's been going on? Do you anticipate, in terms of the timeline, that first draft for the...
I would also like to make a motion that the UA agrees to vote via email on our first section of the draft when it's completed, because it's going to likely be before the next meeting, or if it is before the next meeting, so that we do not have to wait another month before it could go to public comment.
I see. Okay. So the rationale is that you want to have it earlier on so that it gives enough time for that next part.
Okay. Since we're not meeting bi-weekly, I just want to move that if we can complete that first section of the draft, which we are very close to completing, that the UA would vote via email so that we can get it out to the community and we can continue our efforts on the procedural section. And
So the motion is to potentially do an email vote for the draft that comes out from the CJC. Anybody second that before we go into discussion?
I have a question. Is the motion allowed in our bylaws?
So the question is the email vote in accordance to the bylaws of the UA? I assume so.
No, we've done it last year. As I remember it, just at the end of the spring semester, because there was stuff that we had to try out. And I think there were email votes. I didn't expect this. Here's some of the background. What we would like to do.
I'm going to withdraw my motion.
Yes.
Okay.
Here's what we discussed in the CJC. We would like, when we have this first part, a draft done, we would like to bring it to the UA for comment, take it public for comment, and send it to the university for comment,
all at the same time. And the reason for that was that serial discussions and amendments and so forth would be really, really complicated.
Mm-hmm. So, oh, wait. Sorry. Yeah. Okay.
So while that is what the CJC did discuss, by reading our bylaws over, the UA does have, we can make recommendations to the UA, but it's the UA's vote to have it go to public.
Then I think it's
yeah, so I'm trying to
you know make it,
yeah, I agree with what you're saying, but I believe that to stay consistent with our bylaws, the UA needs to either approve it for public comment or send it back to us.
So we can do the same thing. We can have the vote for public comment by email, and at the same time, an invitation to all members of the UA to comment and to participate in the draft. At the same time, that we take it to public comment, and at the same time, we send it to the university for their very input. But the idea is that, you know, once we have a draft to go forward, mm-hmm. is that we put it out for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now I understand.
You're on the same page.
Now we're on the same page.
Go ahead before we move on. Okay. So. All right, do you want to propose another motion?
I will try. It's probably going to be the same motion, but said a little bit differently. But I move that the UA votes on the first section of the draft that the CJC recommends via email to allow us to open it to public comment rather than waiting until the next meeting and waiting for the UA to bring back comments prior. Which I think is consistent
with what we have been speaking about
the entire semester, kind of everyone being interested. Okay. So I don't know how to phrase this more clearly.
So, ooh, what's the question?
Yeah, so I think the easiest way to phrase it is I move that we vote via email on the CJC's first recommended draft to open it to public comment at the same time that the UA is reviewing it for comment.
I think that's as close as we'll get
yes.
to a truncated. All right. Anybody second that motion?
Second.
By Richard? All right. So now that the motion is on the floor, any comments or questions about the motion that Logan just proposed? Any concerns regarding this approach? I just want to say that I do agree with this style in terms of, you know, the pertinence of time and the transparency from both the CJC to the public and to the UA. I think it's probably the most effective way. And just having things already out there instead of, you know, having it all as one to bring forward, I think is a lot smoother. All right. Well, and with that, we're going to go into vote. So does anybody dissent on the motion? No? Any abstentions? No? All right. So the motion passes with unanimous consent. Logan?
I also move that the UA, if the CJC recommends members to the university and hearing review board before the next meeting, we also agree to vote via email so that they can be trained and we're not doing this process.
So the motion on the table is to conduct an email vote again prior to the next UA meeting.
If the subcommittee of the CJC and the CJC approves the vacant university hearing and review board members.
I see. Okay. Anybody second that motion? Second by Richard. So do you want to just justify that a little bit and kind of give clarity? So the time, like why the email
yeah,
vote
sure.
and that sort?
We're already very far behind for having vacancies to the university hearing and review boards. That's something that is voted on by the CJC in the spring semester. So I just got an email of another vacancy. So we're somewhere between 6 and 8 vacancies.
Mm.
And these are all people that need to be trained. And the boards are lacking in a substantial amount of people.
Mm-hmm.
We currently have a subcommittee of 2. And we're challenging one of them, and I'm trying to get more on that. But
uh-huh.
we're trying to move this if possible, along as quickly as possible. There's a chance that it won't be until the next UA meeting, but I'm just being hopeful.
Right.
And on the chance that we can finish that, I think it's really important to have our board fully staffed, and if we can do that before the next meeting, I think that would just be really efficient.
Do you think timeline-wise you'll be able to get to that point? Do you have people currently, or is this going to be an open process that you have to select people into those vacancies?
From my understanding, it's kind of a confusing process, and I'm trying to speak to multiple parties to figure out how to go about it, but I believe that we can consider past applicants as well as people who had formerly had previously served.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm trying to look into whether we would need to send out full-blown applications again. So it's kind of up in the air.
Yeah.
This motion is just on the off chance that our committee can approve before the next meeting that we don't delay.
Okay. Any other questions or comments regarding the motion? No? All right. So we'll go into vote. Does anybody dissent on the motion at hand? No? Any abstentions? All right. So the motion passes. So we'll go forward with both the draft policy, the original draft, and also with the HRB appointment. Great. And with that, that appears to be the end of our agenda.
Would you like to nominate anyone for the vacant vacant TJC position? Do you want to fill that position? I mean.
Yeah, we have to go and move executive session for that.
Okay.
So.
Move to adjourn.
You move to adjourn. All right. Seconded by Andy. All in favor? Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right. So meeting is over now at 5:45.
So we did not.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.